And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai's Soapbox on the station that loves you. So that's the Jerry Garcia Band. It's like he's the lead of the Grateful Dead. I wasn't quite sure which one it was, but so that's his solo effort, Jerry Garcia Band. Great music. And so today on Kauai Soapbox, this will be a show where we really super inviting callers in at 826-7771. But we're going to be talking about a lot of things, many different announcements and issues that are at hand, and really looking at everything from the deep state at the national level to our local level, a little less pernicious amount of that, but just like why things happen the way that they do. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store and Pono Pies.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Pono Pies, dedicated to restoring breadfruit as a major food crop in Hawaii. Gluten, dairy, and GMO-free. Delicious Pono Pies, available at health food stores throughout Hawaii. PonoPies.com, 808-283-3718.
Keala nu'ukia KKCR. O KKCR ka hui leki o kū o ko ano Kauai. He hui leki o kaiaulu, e pai pai ia e ka lehu lehu a e ho'o lele ana me ka ho'o laha ole. Nā pahu hopu a KKCR. Helu e kahi. E ho'o ulu i ka hoe, e a o aku, a e ho'o hau oli ho'i i nā hoa ho'o lohe. Helu e lua. E mālama, e ho'o mau, a e ho'o lau le apu i nā mea a me ka nohona Hawaii. Helu e kolu. Ho ike i ka nani ākea i kō kākō kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu kū waho. He kahua o KKCR no nā leo a me nā mele laha loa pū no me ka laha ole. O keke kahu foundation, ka mea e ho'o holo ai i a mau papahana leki o.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. Please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you. Your support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
Yes, mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And I enjoy that we have both our underwriters, I should say all three, our underwriters that help keep us on the air. It was nice hearing Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Does really a very extraordinary job of exploring these national issues. One of the reasons that on Kauai Soapbox we don't go in quite so deep, because it's hard to compete with the kind of expert testimony that she has on that program. We will be talking a little bit, though, today about some national issues. And then that was Kauai's community radio station's mission statement in Hawaiian. And it's really a wonderful experience to see Olelo, the Hawaiian language, resurging. More and more grown adults are able to again speak that, mostly because they have grown up in the immersion programs in the charter schools. There are other ways that people do learn it. You can definitely learn it online. And in fact, on my website, FeliciaCowden.com, on the educational resources, I have two different locations where people could go in and self-teach Olelo, Hawaiian language.
And so Olelo...
Olelo.
Olelo means Hawaiian language.
Yeah, like it means, yeah, the spoken language.
Okay.
And if there's an Akamai listener, they can correct me on that. But the thing that's challenging with the Hawaiian language is there are so many different meanings for the same word. So it's very context sensitive.
And is there a verb? Is it, does one olelo?
When you have a verb, it typically has ho'o at the beginning. When you say ho'olokahi, lokahi is unity. Ho'olokahi would be creating unity. Ho'oponopono, creating like righteousness or peace. Ho'omanawanui, that roughly translates to patience, but like if you break that word out, it's kind of like making time larger. So generally speaking, if you see ho'o at the beginning of a word, it is a verb, often coupled with something that would be like a noun. Like, I'm just making one up right now. I don't know if it's a real word, but if I were to say ho'o ohana, it might be bringing the family together or creating family, you know, something like that. So usually you'll hear it with a regular word. I love how on the morning shows there is language being taught. I listened to Uncle Louis Kabibi's show on Monday, and he actually was having people repeat the phrases, and he broke it down, and I was driving around in my car, and I was doing the language lesson with him.
He was asking the listener to repeat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He said it, and he said it again, and he kept breaking it down. He was being a language teacher.
Yeah.
And it was a phrase, and I can't pull it all together right now, but it was, you know, when you hear it over and over again, it really does help, you know, and it helps you understand how the words come together and how, like, the possessives are pretty interesting. Like, but anyway, I don't want to turn this into a language lesson on the air because I am very much a novice. Perpetual haumana, meaning student, not kumu, meaning teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But in looking at the mission statement in Hawaiian, and definitely a very big part of the Kekahu Foundation, Butch Kekahu was one of our founders of the station, and intention was to strengthen and perpetuate the Hawaiian culture. And so, you know, particularly on the talk shows, that is a very strong theme.
Right.
Yeah. So, it is somewhat a theme today. I mean, kind of seemingly more and more it's a theme on almost every show to some degree.
The perpetuation of the Hawaiian culture.
The perpetuation of the Hawaiian culture. I feel like we are having a second renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
The first big renaissance happened when the Hokulea went and disproved the intentional false indoctrination that the Hawaiians just somehow ended up here on accident. You know, they were lucky and they were on these canoes and... You know, then there's now been a real re-look at what great maritime people they were and how for a couple thousand years they were, the Polynesians were cruising around the Pacific and Oceania, which is what sometimes this quote-quote continent is called, where it's a whole bunch of islands. The roadways were the ocean, and so it was a group of people who were very good in the water. And so when that happened in 1979, they had a constitutional convention, and they changed some of the laws that were so horrible, particularly to the Hawaiian people, like that they couldn't speak Hawaiian or couldn't name their children Hawaiian.
And what did you say, 1779?
No, I said 1979.
Oh, okay. All right.
Did I say 1779? I don't think so.
You said it or I heard it. It doesn't matter. But
1979.
Okay.
Yes. 1778 was when Captain Cook first landed here, employed by the English Navy to go look for the backside of the 13 colonies to come from behind in the American Revolution. I didn't find it. George Vancouver managed to get up to the Pacific Northwest, but they never did find the easy path to bring the soldiers to the East Coast from behind. Prior to that, they didn't know really about the North American continent very well. So that is what happened there. So, you know what? I've been looking at a whole lot of topics, and we're going to be touching on these, and people can call in, and, you know, there's some people who I'm kind of expecting to call in, but also just holding it out to 826-7771 if anybody wants to call in. But I've been watching and wondering and looking. It's a constant conversation that happens on this show and all over, is why, when we have elections and we talk about what we want, there seems to be one pathway where it goes through the public process. It's very difficult to get anything passed, anything created. And then there's another pathway where it seems like nobody asks, and all kinds of things happen, get funded, and if they did ask people, it's not something that people would necessarily want. So I picked a clip. I wanted to play a little bit of a clip. I was going to play about, really about total, about 7 or 8 minutes out of a clip. I'm going to break it up, but it's Bill Moyers, and he's talking to this guy, Mike Lofgren, who had quit from being a staff member for the Congress, the U.S. Congress, because he was very discouraged. And I like that this is a three-year-old clip, because it's not about Trump. It's and he does talk about Obama because he was the president at that time. But the point of it isn't really, you know, talking about President Obama. It's talking about, at least in the context of this show, why certain challenges or certain pathways perpetuate that seems to take the power away from the people and concentrate it. A lot of times I hear people blame it on our politicians, but in reality, the politicians almost don't even have their hand on that steering wheel. It's an unaccountable group, and it's not necessarily that anybody is bad. I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. Certainly at the local level, I would say what we see here is good people, you know, in a game in which the rules have already been written, you know, and we'll talk about that revolving door, you know, from working for government to industry, then maybe being on boards and commissions or nonprofits, and how these things happen a little bit at the local level. This is not intended to be a scold. It's intended to be awake and to participate. I was at the Planning Commission meeting again today. I'll be talking about that a little bit later. And frankly, I was really happy with the outcome of everything that happened to the Planning Commission today. And it was, you know, a number of issues that went by really quickly. But what I look at when I'm around the room is so few people actually participate. And there are some people who arguably over-participate. Like, I would say I'm one of them. You know, I'm there. And I don't want to be constantly the one to be there. There's probably 20 really strong regulars and maybe 50 people who participate a lot. But most people feel like, oh, I can't make a difference. And I don't know if that's being emotionally lazy or being overwhelmed with their lives. But I will say you really can make a difference. And it really does make a difference if people engage. And it is a question of paying attention as things go on. The state level and the national level, it's a little bit more difficult. But anyway, so I want to play this clip here, which is just making sure here. We are all volunteers in here. And so sometimes using this equipment, I make some mistakes. Yes?
Yeah, and so that the whole dynamic that you're talking about, that's the deep state that you're talking about.
Yeah, and right? So we're going to hear these guys, this man, Bill Moyers, who's on television, and he's talking to this Washington insider, Mike Lofgren, discussing the problem.
Anatomy of the Deep State. You'll want to read it as soon as we finish this conversation.
So he's
Mike
an author
Lofgren,
of that book.
Welcome.
Good to be here again, Bill.
This is a difficult subject to talk about. It would be easier if it were a conspiracy you're describing, but that's not the case, is it?
No, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. This is not some cabal that was hatched in the dark of night. This is something that hides in plain sight. It's something we know about, but we can't connect the dots, or most people don't connect the dots. It's kind of a natural evolution when so much money and political control is at stake in the most powerful country in the world. This has evolved over time.
And you call it the real power in the country.
Correct. It is a hybrid of corporate America and the national security state. Everyone knows what the military-industrial complex is, since Eisenhower talked about it in his farewell address.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Everyone knows Wall Street and its depredations. Everyone knows how corporate America acts. They're both about the same thing. They're both about money, sucking as much money out of the country as they can, and they're about control, corporate control and political control.
You said this, in your judgment, is the big story of our time.
It is the big story of our time. It is, I would say, the red thread that runs through the history of the last three decades. It's how we had deregulation, financialization of the economy, the Wall Street bust, the erosion of our civil liberties, and perpetual war.
You write that the secret and unaccountable deep state floats freely above the gridlock between both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue is the paradox of American government in the 21st century.
Well, that's just the thing. The common narrative of the last 5 years, and on a superficial level it's right, is that government is broken, it's dysfunctional, it's gridlocked. Well, that's true, and that is the visible government, the constitutional government we learn about in Civics 101, and it is gridlocked. But somehow Obama can go into Libya, he can assassinate U.S. citizens, he can collect all our phone records without a buy your leave from anyone. He can even bring down a jet carrying a president of a sovereign country without asking anyone's permission, and no one seems to connect the two. The failure of our visible constitutional state and this other government that operates according to no constitutional rules or any constraint by the governed.
You go on to say, though, that it's not just the executive branch that is the heart of this, that is just one of the several constituencies that make up what you call the deep state.
Well, it's all the national security functions of the government. It's the Pentagon, it's Homeland Security, it's the State Department. It's also Treasury, because they have a kind of symbiotic relationship with Wall Street.
For one thing, they control the flow of money.
Absolutely. And that's why there's such a flow not only of money but of personnel between Wall Street and the Treasury Department. There's other aspects of government. There's a portion of the judiciary, a small portion of the judiciary, the so-called foreign intelligence surveillance courts. Most of Congress doesn't even know how they operate.
Talk a little bit.
So we're going to listen to just a little bit more of this in a minute, but later in the show, like in the second hour, I mean, callers can shift our direction, but I was going to do a little bit more on national issues in the second half of the show, a little bit more at the local level. But right there, when we're talking about all this big amounts of money, he's going to go on and talk a little bit more about where these incredibly large amounts of money come from. And you know, right now, we're hearing on our own news things to foster fear of North Korea. And I just can't really buy into the fear that they're going to nuke us, you know. It seemed...
Are you referring to some news accounts?
Yeah, there's been some news accounts here in Hawaii saying that, you know, that there's potential for Hawaii to be a target of a nuclear war from North Korea or a nuclear strike, and so I'm seeing people reacting to that.
Right. So people are afraid of what could potentially down the line be a real threat.
What could potentially down the line be a real threat, although, I mean, I don't know that it isn't a real threat any more than right now, but I personally, through my own lens that I look at it, I see it as going, okay, they are manufacturing support for us to be wanting this very large military investment that they're putting into Hawaii. There's a lot of resistance to having the big military footprint. I'm always reading this number, 25% of Hawaii's land, but I think it might be Oahu's land. I can't really see that's all of Hawaii, but a very big footprint, military footprint on the islands, and they want to put like $3 to $4 billion worth of investment to strengthen this up, and there's a lot of resistance to it. So, oh, okay, great. Now we get to be afraid that North Korea is going to harm us. And I question whether that's real or if that isn't, you know, just like herding the cattle to say, okay, you know, let's get behind that. My intuitive sense, not a military person, but I go, well, are we not really pointing our guns at China? Are we not really pointing our guns at that whole region and trying to masquerade behind a fear of the North Koreans? You know, I don't know. I don't know, but when I look, I just can't buy into it. You don't have the same opinion, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it seems historically and in terms of just sort of geopolitical consensual reality that the North Koreans are very belligerent, you know, openly belligerent, that their national doctrine is destruction of the United States. And that they have made great strides in manufacturing missiles and nuclear weapons that can hit not just Hawaii, but the United States. And they're not there yet, but we know that they're trying and that they're progressing. So I can see that, you know, of course, there's going to be powers and a push for a military buildup in response to that threat. And
but I guess for me, I don't speak Korean.
Right.
So I don't know if they're really saying that or if that's just what they're telling us they're saying.
Well, there are people that go there. I mean, they have, I think, just recently, actually. Yeah. I do believe that the Trump administration just prohibited American citizens from going to North Korea at all. But people do go there. They just give them minders that walk them around everywhere. But, I mean,
right.
Plenty of people do speak Korean. I mean,
yeah, but I just have never been really able to truly imbibe that threat. I think it'd be completely foolish for this country to decide to attack us, because they can take us on. They might be able to throw one strike, but they're going to be obliterated. I mean, it's a suicide move to do it.
Yeah, so, but from the Pentagon's point of view, you know, if you're in the seat there, they're looking at this as a hold on, let me get that.
Yeah, we can take this call if they want to come on the air, and then I'm going to play a little bit more of this. I'm totally happy to have this discussion. Okay, aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. I have a comment that I think bears heavily on what you're saying, or maybe gives background, because
okay.
If we just simply take an overview or step back and look at the past. How many decades have we been fed fear?
Right.
It falls into a gigantic category of let's give them another thing to be afraid of, and here's some more. Here's a disease. Here's a one threat after another, viruses, insects, you name it. It's been propagated and put on the media repeatedly. Orange alerts, red alerts after 9/11.
Yeah.
How many thousands of times have they fed us fearful stories to keep us in a state of consistent and constant fear? This is their program. We don't really count. As far as I can tune in, and I'm very, very intuitive, I've been listening to this stuff forever, my sense and my strong sense, like yours, Felicia, is that it's just another fear program. And yeah, if the Koreans are that stupid, but they're not. Come on, let's just be real. Let's talk from our guts, okay? They're not that stupid. It's just a fear mongering from them. They love it. They all get caught up in this game, and it's another reason to make money, spend money, and try to make more money. War, war, war. Or whatever other kind of war, disease war, you name it, terrorism, whatever can be, it makes money, and it keeps us under the thumb of fear. So it really makes me mad if you can't tell.
Yeah, so you and I are about on the same page. Like, I guess the fear push, having lived for decades with it, has just sort of lost its credibility with me, and the more I get to know people everywhere as we're communicating across country lines, I just realize, you know what, I'm just not afraid of them. Just not afraid.
No, and it's like a very simplification of this would be inoculate your children. Well, you know, we have belief systems and then we have other belief systems. But if you understand how the body works and you have a strong belief in your own innate honoring of your body and listening to your body and learning how to honor your body, you know if you have an immune system that can handle things. I personally don't believe in contagion, and I know that I'm strong enough to withstand just about any onslaught of any so-called germ, which I also don't believe in, because of my belief that I am strong and healthy and I keep my body that way. I'm responsible for my body. If people would just take that level of responsibility a little further, maybe they could let go of some of this fear and be strong and healthy in their minds and their spirits again.
Yes, and those are related and complex topics, and I actually do have mandatory vaccination on my list to be touching on a little bit later, because it is, you know, I think the thing that I'm looking for is balance. You know, we don't want to have no protection on disease or war. We want to have some, but do we want to just give a blank check to the people who are deciding what they can force upon us? And so, Marshall, did you have something you wanted to share?
No.
Okay. He was. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening, and I have more to say. I'm sure I'll call back when you get to that other subject of inoculation.
Okay, yes. Keep listening. I'm going to play a little bit more of this, and then please do feel welcome to call back. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, I love the Bill Moyers. More and more and more. Thank you.
Okay, so I got a little bit more of that. It's actually a really great program, and if you want to look it up, or I put it on my own Felicia Alonji Cowden Facebook page. It's called The Deep State Hiding in Plain Sight. And what I like on this is it's not even talking about the Illuminati or, you know, what happened 1,000 years ago or any of this.
Right.
It's very ordinary, not extraordinary.
Yeah, and present time, which is wise.
And present time.
Being in present time. Let's stay here now. We can learn from the past, but let's be here now and be realistic. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll be listening.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure. Aloha.
Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. And I do want to share one public service announcement. That's another great thing that we do. And this is about the Canoe Club down in Hanalei. I think it's Namolokama. We'll listen. Who's got a good event coming up this weekend?
Namolokama o Hanalei Canoe Club presents the 11th annual Hanalei Bay Swim Challenge fundraiser on Saturday, July 29th. Fun competitive swims for all ages, silent auction with prizes including ski vacations in Mammoth Mountain and Telluride. Online registration at HanaleiBaySwimChallenge.com or 760-914-0303. The Open Water Swim Challenge in beautiful Hanalei Bay on July 29th.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I'm going to check to see if I have this other caller coming on. Otherwise, we'll take another call before we go back to Bill Moyers. Aloha, thank you for calling.
Aloha, this is Felicia and Marshall.
Yes, it is.
Well, aloha, guys. A couple comments, please. Regardless of whether someone attacks us or not, the last decade or so, I've taken from my own responsibility for my own health, in line with what the lady was talking about, because any kind of exposure to radiation, whether it was our own situation, a military accident or whatever, I've been buying from the source that sells it to the U.S. Navy potassium iodine tablets.
Potassium iodine, okay. Oh.
Mm-hmm. And it costs like $12, and it's good for 6 years. And then when they pow, I buy another set. And you should never take them unless the government says, if you have it, take it. So the main thing is it will protect your thyroid.
Right, okay? And that was something that people were looking at after the Fukushima incident.
Right, and
yeah, I mean, I just keep this on hand. I mean, you know, $12 for 6 years, that's cheap protection. And then, you know, I spent half my money of my Social Security check on, you know, buying like Ayurvedic herbs and all that jazz and keeping myself healthy. But you never know what's coming down the pike, right?
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a product that is to be taken in the event of, say, a meltdown at a nuclear plant.
Nuclear exposure, sir.
Any kind of radiation.
Let's say a military plane was flying over, and they had an accident, and they crashed in the sea off Kauai, or they crashed on the land on Kauai, or a truck carrying nuclear materials. Planes, from whatever the exposure, you know, if you have the potassium iodine, then it will protect your thyroid.
Right.
But you don't take it every day. You just take it. If you hear an announcement, well, there's been, like, radiation, you know, exposure, then if you have potassium iodine, we'll take it. So, and I buy it from the same source. This is in New Jersey, that they sell to the U.S. Navy.
Okay, and then Marshall had a point he was trying to make. Do you want to say it, Marshall?
Well, you may have just covered it while I was on the phone, but basically this is something that you would also take in the event of a nuclear attack.
That's correct? Right. Any kind
of nuclear exposure, whether it's from a hospital, you know, spilling their contents of their nuclear material, or military, whatever the source is.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
And I wanted to just quickly say, most Americans don't understand that after the U.S. military ran out of targets in North Korea, and I'm not assigning blame to anybody, but the situation was such that the only targets they had left were the dams. So we destroyed all the dams in North Korea. I'm not defending North Korea. I'm not defending America. I'm just saying it's just like there's all these, just as like Japan did terrible things to the Koreans north and south, they did terrible things to, I mean, you know, it's like I know a woman went to my church, and when she was like about 11 or 12, and she would dress like an old lady, real dirty and real funky, so the Japanese soldiers would not rape her. So the whole thing is, you know, it's the history of mankind is a history of complete sadness of our behavior is not the best. So, you know, I just think that one could look into why perhaps the leader in North Korea would like sign his own death warrant of his country if they attacked us. But I mean, I'm more concerned about just the practical aspects of things we can do something about. And all these theories are wonderful. And I just find it interesting myself in terms of, like, you know, crazy theories. You know, like, how come the conservatives love the date 9/11? Like, when they took out President Allende in Chile.
Right, right. We've seen a lot happen on 9/11.
I really think that, you know, it wasn't all that cut and dried in terms of the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center, but I mean, who knows? I don't trust any government, especially the U.S. government and
right.
Russia. Those two are the biggest criminals today.
Okay, and I have people
well,
staffed.
Thank you, Marshall and Felicia.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, good evening.
I'm sorry,
uh-oh.
Felicia.
All right. I think that was Alan, so
yeah.
I need Alan to call back.
Please call back. My apologies.
Yes. I'm just going to play, while I'm waiting for Alan to call back, I'm going to play this a couple more minutes of this piece. So.
More about the nexus, the connection between the national security state and Wall Street? Because this is a theme that runs through your essay.
Do you know that about 30 blocks north of here, there is a restaurant that will sell you a truffle for $95,000? Also in New York, Christie's sold at auction a painting by Francis Bacon for $142 million. Now, a parallel situation with the national security state, the NSA spent $1.7 billion to build a facility in Utah that will collect one yottabyte of information. That's as much information as has ever been written in the history of the world. It costs $400 by the time the Pentagon finishes paying contractors to haul 1 gallon of gasoline into Afghanistan. That's a real extravagant amount of money. In both cases of the national security state and the corporate state, they are sucking money out of the economy as our infrastructure collapses. We have a tinker toy power grid that goes out every time there's inclement weather. Tens of millions of people are on food stamps. We incarcerate more people than China, an authoritarian state with 4 times our population. Does anyone see the disparity between this extravagance for the deep state and the penury that is being forced on the rest of the country? That isn't a natural evolution. Something made it happen. We're having a situation where the deep state is essentially out of control. It's unconstrained. Since 9/11, we have built the equivalent of 3 Pentagons around the D.C. metropolitan area, holding defense contractors, intelligence contractors, and government civilians involved in the military-industrial complex. There are over 400,000 contractors, private citizens, who have top-secret security clearances.
And they are heart and soul of the deep state, as you describe it.
Absolutely.
They're being privatized, which means the power shifts from accountable officials to unaccountable contractors.
About 70% of the intelligence budget goes to contracts.
How new?
And this is just like it continues. It's a very good program. And what I like in it being 3 years old is that we're really seeing how the situation has only gotten worse. So there's an element of government that basically almost has an open checkbook to certain industry that is in charge of the regulatory agencies, and there's a revolving door that goes through it. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Oh, good.
Hi, sorry about dropping you.
Hello, Alan here.
Yeah, can you turn off your radio?
Turn off my radio. Okay, just a second. Stand by. Is that better?
Yes.
Sorry about that. Okay, I think very interesting program today. You're hitting a vital spot in my education when you talk about nuclear attack. The problem, as I see it, is North Korea not necessarily has to actually explode an atomic weapon and hurt the Hawaiian Islands. What they can do, and this is well established, Congress knows it, and Dr. Peter Benson Pry has been trying to push Congress to protect our electronic systems. The point is that if you explode a nuclear device at 100 miles altitude, so it doesn't even hurt anybody in the ground. What it does is it puts out what's called EMS, which stands for electromagnetic pulse, EMP, mm-hmm. EMP is devastating to any unprotected electronics. Like, it'll fry everybody's ignition in their cars because they're all electronic ignition. It'll fry radios, TV, everything. You lose all communication and all electrical. So you basically are set back not by an explosion at the ground level, but by radiation through the atmosphere that destroys electronics. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. So what I was curious about, I was going to call a base out here, PMRF, and say, you know, they have this THAAD missile system, which will intercept incoming missiles. And my question is, could a THAAD see that a missile is coming from North Korea, and could they destroy it before it explodes over, you know, over the Hawaiian Islands with its electromagnetic pulse? So that's a question I have for the military. And of course, I think the smartest thing to do is everybody stands by North Korea, and the minute they launch anything, they wipe it out right at the spot. So there's my two bits worth, okay?
Yeah, and I think that that is what Pacific Missile Range Facility actually exists for, is to be able to develop the tools to you know, shoot things out of the air, so to test for defensive efforts like that. You worked for NASA, is that correct?
Oh, yeah, I did. I did a lot of studies working on many systems. But, you know, back in 1859, there was something called the Carrington effect. What happened that particular year was somebody named Carrington was observing the sun with an electromagnetic pulse from the sun. And it approached the whole world, and basically it blew up everything, every electronic device, and railroad tracks caught fire, and with telegraph systems went down. And so what his Carrington effect was, basically the sun could do, anytime they decided to wipe us out, basically they could do the same thing from the sun. So you have to be aware that the sun could possibly have an electromagnetic pulse. And then the other side of it would be if military decided to do the same thing.
Well, when you were listening, or if you heard this interview with Bill Moyers and Mike Lofgren, do you see a accuracy in what he's saying, where, you know, it's gotten kind of out of control in terms of the defense spending, you know, and the contractors and all the stuff that just feeds on it, or are you comfortable with that?
Well, you know, the defense spending right now, as I see it, is they're catching up on military, like the brand new aircraft carrier named after Gerald Ford just got launched. That's $11-something billion. That's the kind of military spending that matters now, and also bringing up the aircraft count. So, I mean, the military budget, of course, would be more soldiers. Maybe not. Maybe we just need better equipment.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm admittedly not a military person. I just know that it's hard for me to be able to react to fear baiting. And so I'm probably like the boy who cried wolf enough times that it's like, okay, you know.
Well, I was lucky enough to be about 10 years old when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that they made a mistake. In fact, just today's paper talked about Admiral Nimitz was notified that he would be the Supreme Commander of the Pacific. And what he brought out as soon as he arrived in Honolulu to take over Pearl Harbor, and he realized right away there were three things the Japanese did wrong. One was they did not just take out the dry docks, which meant that after they left and our ships were sunk or whatever, that was a facility we could repair ships on the dry dock. And then the second thing was the fuel. The fuel was not touched.
Mm-hmm. Don't give them ideas. Okay.
Yeah. there were three things like this that Admiral Nimitz just talked about. In fact, it was in today's paper. I think it was.
Okay, so they put it on the paper.
Anyway,
okay.
Long story short, just over on Kauai here, we formed what we call the Kauai Volunteers. We had horses, and we teamed up with the the 27th Infantry Division showed up at our front door, and then we had the our own National Guard. So we started working right away, and we heard all the stuff about Pearl Harbor, that the Japs really screwed up big time. They didn't take out three things.
Oh, okay. All right. So everybody's anyway, heard this already. Okay.
That's what my take from going back from many, many years ago, that, you know, there's surprises everywhere.
Well, thank you for listening and calling in and sharing your mana'o about that. I know that you're speaking from experience.
Well, you folks are great. You put on a good program. It's plus and minus here and there, but it's always good.
Thank you. I mean, we're always, and we need the people to keep the
thank
more
you,
pluses
Alicia
than
Marshall,
minuses.
Have a great day.
Okay.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Thanks, Felicia. Two comments regarding EMP. The military situation. Thank God your station manager, Dean, has you guys already with the analog.
Yes.
The thing that, you know, they discovered this EMP when a Russian MiG jet defected to Japan in the 70s, and when they took the avionics apart, they discovered, wait a second, there's just vacuum tubes, there's no digital. That's when they got clued in, aha. Now, in terms of the gentleman's comment regarding THAAD, I believe THAAD has a more limited parameter of horizon for shooting down incoming missiles, so that would not be appropriate for, you know, unless it was really close to Kauai or the target in the islands. They've done, like, I think 17 tests, and only recently did they launch from Marshall, from the Kwajalein Atoll, an ICBM. And so from Vandenberg, they shot the interceptor. This is the first time they ever attempted to knock down an ICBM, and it worked. But unfortunately, in all the different tests for the interceptors of whatever variety of missile coming at us, this coming at the target in California, they only were, I think, like two out of 17 for hits. So the whole thing is, what's important is that, you know, I wouldn't rely on the gentleman's comment on, like, you know, aircraft carriers, because China has a website, it's called Iron Anvil, where you can go online, and if you can suggest a winning strategy for knocking out each one of our 12 aircraft carrier-based naval groups, then China is sitting in the catbird seat. So the thing is, China ain't our friend, and they would love to take us out. They're also angry of the behavior of the West, not just America and Britain and Russia, for the West's bad behavior. So, you know, what goes around comes around, right?
Yes, and it's interesting. And then, like, we are able to sit here and see who our online audience is. So I'm saying aloha to Germany, Japan, Belgium, Virginia. You know, we have a lot of listeners in from the East Coast right now. I actually have a lot of listeners.
And the last comment I wanted to make was, you know, they announced the other day, well, there's only 17 years left in the Social Security Trust Fund. Well, unfortunately, there is nothing in the Social Security Trust Fund except IOUs. We take the money and we, you know, out of the Social Security Trust Fund, and we leave an IOU in that file or in that vault, and so there's no more nothing.
How do you know there's no more nothing in there?
Because, dear, I'm a news junkie.
Okay.
So, I mean, the point is, I've seen all kinds of reports on this. You know, I find it, you know, it's just it's a total scam. You know who started Social Security? It was the Kaiser. It was to control the population of Germany. Like, you know, well, you got to be good citizens because you're going to get pie in the sky when you're retired. So, you know, the whole thing is to control people's behavior. And, you know, it's just like the best thing, you know, is, you know, go to our you know, Juan Wilson's website, Island Breath, and, you know, take responsibility for your own kuleana, right, your own situation, and then hope for the best, right?
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because I know my father-in-law worked for the government around the time of Social Security coming on.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you know, bringing in there after we had the Depression and there are orphans and, you know, it's a little, you know, a little bit of a catch safety net for people. You know, I've listened to all the different polarities of the arguments, and it's hard to know what is right. So it's good that we explore the edges on all of it. But
Well, here's the thing. My dad was born in 1896. My parents were married in 1929. It wasn't until 1933 when the Supreme Court said that unions were allowed. And, of course, then Roosevelt came in about that same year.
What do you
mean,
unions?
And the whole thing is, at that time...
Marriages? Which unions? Oh, unions. Business. Labor unions.
If your boss said you work every day, 18 hours a day, you better do it. There was no health insurance. There was no vacation. There was no more nothing. And so, you know, the only time I ever saw my parents cry was when Eisenhower was elected the first time. Because they knew what reality was like under the Republicans. And I'm sure a lot of the local people, when the plantation owners made them, in a sense, vote Republican, it wasn't until, I think, the early 50s that the Democratic, persuasion got to the local folk. The whole thing is, it's just like they're trying to manipulate us, as a woman said about fear, you know, one, that's not a good way to go. And, I just think that, we should be prepared. But the thing is, when Social Security started, there were 17 workers for every one retiree. Now there's about 2.3 workers for every retiree. So, I'm just trying to get to the point to strengthen my immune system and not have a bunch of objects. I'm an old dude, so I don't need to have all these little devices, because if I kick the bucket, then someone's going to get my little devices, and I could care less about that. I just want to live a vital life while I'm still kicking.
Right. It's a challenge.
Yeah, well, thanks for your good program, dear. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, and it's 826-7774. So we are just having kind of a broad conversation about, the role of government and the role of what, we are listening to as the deep state, which is the part of government that isn't elected, that is more of the revolving door.
While we were listening to the caller, I took a look at the Social Security Trust Fund, looked at the report, that 2017 annual report of the Social Security and Medicare Board of Trustees, and it says that it has collected $19.9 trillion over the program's 82-year-old history, has paid out $17.1 trillion, leaving asset reserves of more than $2.8 trillion at the end of 2016 in two trust funds. So $2.8 trillion in assets, but maybe the caller's point was that those assets are listed on paper but not actually there.
Okay, I see. Well, thank you so much for that research. It sounds like we have another caller. So I appreciate that research, Marshall. And, so other line. Okay. Hang on one moment.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, it was a fast busy. Aloha and aloha kako. I would like to make a comment regarding the Korean threat.
Yes.
I wonder where these people are taking the idea that North Korea wants to attack us. If you ever read the website of the Korean American Friendship, and they are telling every statement that their leader is saying. He is saying that he will not attack, but he will defend his country if attacked. Now, that would make absolutely sense, because the North Koreans know that if they attack, they could be wiped out from the face of the earth within a couple of hours. I don't think they would ever do that. And, of course, that would create some havoc, and then China would be involved in the whole thing. But I think this whole thing is a scare tactics. They want to implant fear in the people here in Hawaii and elsewhere to support the militarization and the improvement of weapons and just like here in Hawaii, we have a senator, Brian Schatz, who is working very hard to get more military here. And I read the website of the Koreans, or the North Korean government too. You can say that, what if they are lying? Well, taking the same premise, they can say that the American government is lying. So I think we have to approach this with common sense, and not to believe that there is a direct threat from North Korea to Hawaii or even to the United States, unless the United States attacks first. That's what I think.
So thank you. And is this Janos?
Yes, this is Janos, yes.
Okay, so I want to also acknowledge that, like, when we did our show last week on Russia, that you had called in and were unable to get through. And
that's correct.
I have the comments that you had wanted to make. Do you have them in front of you, or would you like me to read them?
Felicia, would you please read it? Because I'm in the car. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, because you had been...
go ahead.
This was in response to what we were talking about with Crimea, and then just the whole Russian conversation. For the people who hadn't heard it, I had some diplomatic experts in here, or who are experienced, maybe that's a better word, highly experienced diplomatic people who work with Russia. That's their career. And they were highlighting their concern about nuclear vulnerability because of how automated that the nuclear weapon system is back and forth. Like, if one strikes, the other one's got 7 minutes or 10 minutes to respond, and so that we're vulnerable for that, and for having have erased a better communication strategy that had been in place. So those people are actually actively working to make a difference and have stronger communication. But you had made this comment that you were unable to call in, and you said, things have changed lately. The mainstream media, hardly ever the U.S. war against terror, and so mainstream media hardly ever speaks about the U.S. war against terror and the terror threat to us this year. Okay, we have a little bit of an English problem there. They are out to find a new enemy, and as you hear it every single day of your life, new enemy is Russia. At least this is how Russia is being presented to you by the media. Good old Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister's recipe is being followed here, namely to create an enemy country by publishing only bad news about it and totally ignoring anything positive. This is happening now about Russia. Due to current technology, we know how many NATO units are deployed along Russia's border, but we don't know what the purpose is. Nobody tells us what the intention is, because the American media does not give reasons other than the fear-mongering line, Russian threat. Most people, not all, in Hawaii and also in the United States, read the regional newspapers and watch the local channels. Regional newspapers and watch the local channels. I have checked our local newspaper, The Garden Island, about good news about Russia or the Russians during the past 10 years. Although I could have gone further back, I could not find any good news. Then, randomly, I checked the archives of 5 more regional newspapers from Nebraska, New York, Indiana, Alaska, and Ohio for good news published about Russia during the past 10 years. One of them had an article about Russian weddings. That was all that you found. Now, if you consider yourself as an average citizen from Hawaii or America, how would you know about the good side of the people of the largest country in the world, if you are not presented information about it? While the internet is there, average people don't regularly search for good news about Russia. Most of them live with what has been presented to them. Since I also speak the Russian language, and I have been at least 16 times in the Soviet Union and Russia, plus I read their newspapers, I know more. And I also know that certain very important and positive things about Russia have not been reported to you by your local channels and by your regional newspapers, because if they were, you might look at the Russians differently, with much less of an implanted hatred. Under these circumstances, how can we become citizen diplomats? One way for sure: travel to Russia and talk to the Russian people. So that's what you had shared. This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, with Felicia and Marshall on Kauai's Soapbox.
Thank you very much, Felicia. And I'm saying the same thing about North Korea.
Okay. And Marshall, do you have something to share? Oh, I thought you were making a... Okay, I thought he was saying he had something to say.
Okay.
Okay, so you're saying that about both North Korea and Russia, that we only hear about the negative, not the positive.
Right. When did you read good news about North Korea? Not many times.
Not many times. I mean, I had a guest on the show here, Kuhan Pak, who is... We spent 2 hours on her experience. Her family is from, she didn't want to call it North Korea, but the part of Korea that's in the north, that's her family. And she grew up partially in South Korea. And so we put quite a bit of energy into what was good about North Korea.
Well, anyway, thank you very much. I'm interested in the rest of the program.
Okay.
Aloha kakou.
Aloha. Thank you so much. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Second Skin Naturals.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We are really enjoying our callers today at 826-7771. Marshall, did somebody have something they wanted you to share?
No, I'm sorry, Felicia. Personal message for you that I'll give you after the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we are hearing a lot about some things that make us afraid. It's important to be able to be looking at that with a discerning eye. We all have a different opinion. Everybody's filters are important. So we're looking at what is being maybe overstated. Is it an accurate statement? You know, how are we working on that? And, you know, as we look at this topic somewhat at a local level, something that I have been, you know, really able to see and experience as I work, particularly with our Kanaka Mo'oli, our Hawaiian community, is that at the core of the Hawaiian culture is malama aina, or aloha aina, love and caring for the land, and that is central. Whereas at the core of what I would call the dominant culture, because it's bigger than the United States of America, the core of the dominant culture is finance and economy, and it seems somewhat like a game of musical chairs, and everybody's trying to get their seat, and if you don't, you'll lose it. And so sometimes we have silos of interest and knowledge. Do we have another call? We do?
Yes.
Okay. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hi, Lisa. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. I just was listening to the commentation about the good things of Russia and the good things of North Korea. I have a friend who's got a son who's married to a Korean girl. I don't know exactly where, but she said it's the most beautiful place. And I would love to start a newspaper about all the good things.
Yeah, the good things in the world?
Yeah, the good things about Russia. Part Russian, and it's been my heritage. And you know, if we keep talking bad, you know, let's start putting out good.
Did you ever watch Stephen Colbert On the Comedy Channel. He had last week a Russia week, so he had gone to Russia. And
No, I didn't see it. It was
kind of fun because he is basically looking at that very thing, though, of course, in droll humor. But it was an expose and a softening of, you know, the dark side of what we're hearing about Russia. And even he had an episode with a Russian oligarch, who it really was a Russian oligarch. So, we need to be doing more of looking at what's good. And, in fact, our show last week, where we were focused on Russia, that was a very big part of their commentary, because both of my guests, Cynthia Lazaroff and Bruce Allen, have spent many years over there.
I'm sorry, I missed it. So yeah, I could probably catch it online.
Yeah, and even on FeliciaCowden.com, there's an archives page, and you can hear it there. But it was definitely, you know, their plea for what we need to do as a grassroots effort to cause both of our governments to be more cautious about, in this case, accidental nuclear war. But also just, you know, how there's really a whole lot alike about our country and our peoples. And basically, I think no matter where you go in the world, people love their children, they love each other, they want to sleep well and have fun and fall in love and eat food. You know, it's a small group of people who seem to push towards the top that seem to be compelling these battles.
What happens is politics get involved and they want to put everybody down.
Yeah.
You know, they're bad. They're out for us. Yada yada. Did you ever try to smile and say hello? You know, I was just hearing the other day on one of your programs about just being friendly to people, except people just, you know, they hear this on the news. I don't watch the news. I'm really a bad person about that. But
I don't know if that's...
before I go to bed.
Yeah, I think many people have stopped watching the mainstream media the way they once did. So it also has lost its credibility. So sometimes it probably has some very rightful things on it, but it's without question, it's lost a very large percentage of its audience. So we're talking to each other more than we are watching the mainstream news. So thank you for calling and sharing.
Yeah, nice. I wish we could come up with the good news newspaper.
Yes, and, you know, I was talking to somebody about that today. I was saying, I went through a period. One thing that's challenging with this program is I joke and say we are somewhat the complaint department for the island, so we look at the harder issues. And as a programmer for it, it can get pretty heavy because I'm going and I'm looking. People call me off the air and share some pretty dark stories. And so before I let somebody...
Once you start talking dark stories, then people start going darker and darker.
Well, so I try and look...
I got a better one than that.
Well, I try and look to see if they're accurate. And then, when I just do happy stories, I get a lot of complaints, actually. That's not why people listen to this show. So, somehow, people listen to this show to explore the little bit more difficult challenges, and I try and look at how do we look at it in an open mind and a non-fearful heart. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I love your show.
Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you. Okay. I think I have another caller holding.
Okay. Thanks, Felicia.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. God bless.
God bless.
Felicia, that caller wanted to remind us of the DLNR meeting tonight in Waimea, because it is coming at 6 o'clock, I think.
Yeah, that was what I had intended for the first hour. We were going to do the national second hour. First hour was going to be local, so we can kind of flip that around a little bit. Today at the Waimea Neighborhood Association, I believe, Neighborhood Center, The Department of Land and Natural Resources is going to be doing another presentation on the Lehua Drop. That's Lehua Island, and they will be putting two different pesticides, a fast-acting pesticide and a slow-acting pesticide on the island. It's 6 to 8 p.m. at the Waimea Neighborhood Center. Probably close to 10 tons of poison. This is that's written by not the government on this one, but they do want to talk to people. We have done two shows on it. They have even flown over here just to be on the radio. I do want to give a shout out to the Department of Land and Natural Resources that I have never had an issue with which they have been so willing to communicate. It is Island Conservation that's a nonprofit that is doing the implementation of it. They say that they are doing a very different style of it. The goal is to poison the rats. It is an anticoagulant. So it's a pretty difficult death. They basically bleed to death. And the idea is to preserve the birds, the owls, if there are any owls over there. Mostly seabirds eat fish. They don't eat off the land. At least that's what is said. And so they believe that they are going to be saving the birds. And so that's the motivation. There's many people who are concerned about it. So at Waimea today, they are back there again, Waimea Neighborhood Center, 6 to 8 p.m. Do we have another caller?
Yes.
Okay, aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. Hi, you're on the air. Could you turn your radio off, please?
Yep.
So at Waimea today, they are back there again, Waimea Neighborhood Center. So I can hear the delay. Okay, so hello. So thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Felicia, this is Kuhan, and I have some good news.
Okay, and did you hear me talking about Korea a little bit earlier?
I did. I heard you talking about Korea. I heard you talking about Lehua.
And I spoke about you even. Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Okay,
But today I'm here to talk about some good news, and that is that if you didn't know that the Senate voted down the health bill that was going to replace Obamacare, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew.
So I guess that's that it did not succeed in getting through a motion to proceed. Right.
So does that mean it is done for this legislative session?
Well, I'm looking at the New York Times. I haven't been following it that closely, but it says a comprehensive plan to replace the law fell short of the votes it needed on Tuesday night, with senators opposing an amendment crafted to appeal to conservative and moderate Republicans. So hours earlier, Vice President Mike Pence cast the tie-breaking vote to begin debate in the Senate on a so it looked like it was going to go forward, and when it got to the Senate, then it got voted down.
So,
but important to note, they did not take a vote on the bill. It just got prevented from going any further, because that's actually a big issue. There are a lot of people, a lot of constituents of Republicans who were promised they would repeal and or replace Obamacare. They want them to take a vote. They don't want them to just not do what they said.
Well, it looks like they voted.
They voted on whether to go any further towards voting.
Oh, I see.
So that's also very interesting, too, because there are many people who within the Republican Party are very concerned, and they don't want this new health care bill. So they want to know how their Republican congressperson is standing on it, if they're going to take their health care away or not. So are we able to celebrate at this point, or is it going
to able to kind of celebrate.
Okay, at least it's a good step.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm celebrating in that I am hearing universal health care and single-payer system and Medicare for all, like, on the mainstream media.
Right. It's almost as if all the confusion going on within the Senate and within the Republican Party and all the mayhem in the White House is just giving us time to build for single-payer, which is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I support it. I know that there are problems, they say, in Medicare and Medicaid. I've heard people complain. I've certainly heard complaints about the VA, the Veterans Administration, and how they do their medical. So all of those are single payer. But I know for me personally, my insurance is just so painfully expensive. It's like $600 a month. I would be willing to pay that in a tax if it meant I could go to the doctor, because I still have such a profound copayment. I pay that, and I don't go to the doctor.
Well, yeah, and I'm surrounded by geriatrics, and they all love their single-payer Medicare.
Yeah, so we do have good examples, and what would make me feel good about paying $600 extra in tax to pay for single-payer is if I knew everybody else could go to the doctor, right? So that we don't have to worry about it. So I personally I feel pretty positive about it. I know I have, when I was younger, had really excellent care in both England and Australia. That was probably 30 years ago or more. And that was single payer at that time. And, you know, we're told it's bad, but it wasn't.
Oh, I know. I know. You don't see them complaining. Well, you do, but they would never go to our system.
So, Kuhan, you are very bright, and I have you on the phone.
Let's talk about Lehua.
Okay, let's talk about Lehua, and then I wondered if you're following the homelessness legislation that's just coming out, or it's not even legislation, it's regulations that are coming out.
Well, I saw that they're spending millions and millions of dollars.
$4 million to push people away.
It's scandalous.
So I think if you do the math on that, I would feel more better if they took that $4 million and even just paid rent for a few years on these people.
But, you know, it would be like somebody's getting the money. The security industry, just like the prison industrial complex, are lobbying to get these contracts to do things that are so inhuman and inhumane. But they make money, like incarceration, like pushing the homeless out. But there's these security companies cropping up, and then they become an industry and have become. They really proliferated right after 9/11 because there was so much fear that a lot of money started going into beefing up. You know, those crazy machines that do your body scans at the airport, mm-hmm. like this whole huge industry
Rumsfeld was a key person inside that.
And law enforcement in the security industry is a key component of the deep state that we were just listening to.
Yes, the deep state. Did you talk about Mike Lofgren's book?
Yes.
We were exploring that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I read
that's one of my favorite books.
Yeah. So along with corporate America and the intelligence establishment and Wall Street and Silicon Valley and the Treasury, we also have law enforcement.
Well, it's basically banking, high tech, and military, and then all the little offshoots of that. So all those things you said are all offshoots of one of those three. And, of course, high-tech and military are essentially the same thing. There would never be any iPads or fancy little apps or mobile devices were it not for all of the military R&D that was spent during the Star Wars Reagan era to set up ways of doing GPS and satellite tracking and missiles. That's all missile technology, getting back to North Korea. It's all missile technology. And then the people like my first husband who created that stuff, well, they got Star Wars money in the 80s. You know, he was never military. He was a complete stoner, acid head, but then go off and develop and design apps and sell them. And, you know, so there's this idea that it's this hip kind of industry that's liberal and associated with, you know, California cutting edge, when in fact it was its birth, its gestation, or its genesis is in the military-industrial complex. And so its whole, how can I say, the way it works, the values that it puts forth are which are the same values of the military, high tech. So that would be speed, centralized power, being able to be everywhere and nowhere at once.
Data collection. that Silicon Valley serves as the most effective means of data collection in the world and feeds that to the intelligence establishment, basically, as one.
Right, and they just work back and forth with one another, and it's just completely horrible. And the best thing we could ever do is just keep the post office, because when I do work overseas, where I'm working in a country, I'm doing activism in a country that is surveilling everything even more than in the U.S., if I communicate by the post office, I can get messages across. But everything we put, if all of our communications is digital, we are completely without freedom. I mean, keep in mind the Constitution ensures us the right to gather, to meet, right, to congregate and have like more than three or four people, the right to gather, I guess. What do they call it? The right to assembly, the right of assembly. That's part of the First Amendment, the right of assembly. Well, we don't have that right of assembly if everything is surveilled. Every kind of communication is surveilled. We've lost that First Amendment right. I mean, I think of high tech as a huge violation of that First Amendment right of assembly, but no one's ever brought that up before. But the post office, you know, that's one place where it's retained, and the radio, because this is analog, except you're going to archive it, and then it won't be anymore. But
but it is archived, and, you know, it's and this is volunteer radio, and it is a discussion and not the news. I mean, we're having a public discussion.
But what I'm saying is it's not digitized. I mean, it will be, but it didn't used to be. And over the airwaves, we have complete freedom to not be surveilled, you know, like on Kauai.
Oh, right.
You know, for example, if we were organizing for Super Ferry like we once were before there was all this intense digital surveillance, John Layman, who was the chairman of the board and also former defense director for Ronald Reagan, who was chairman of board of Super Ferry, he'd be in Pennsylvania, and he wouldn't be able to surveil us because it's analog, the airwaves here. So that's my point, is we have to really keep our analog forms of communication, which is the post office and radio, because that's where we can't be surveilled. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank
Lehua?
You.
Lehua?
Yes. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Well, I just hope that everybody goes down there, because I feel that, you know, judging from what you said in the past about DLNR not being super hep to go forward with this, it just seems, I have this weird intuition that they just sort of got pushed, you know, there's a contractor involved, and, you know, getting back to why are they pushing all these homeless, you know, it's like somebody's getting a gig out of it. And I don't think DLNR and the people that work there, from what you've said, Felicia, are that enthusiastic. I know for a fact that they didn't push for this. It's really this outfit, Island Conservation.
Well,
and I do have a strong feeling that if there's enough outrage, that it'll just squash it. Don't you think?
Well, I think that what I observed is that Island Conservation is paying for it. And it felt like what the Department of Land and Natural Resources was saying is, all right, we know last time we did it, it didn't work. And they said that it was not related, that there had been a fish die-off. They had a different reason for why there had been a fish die-off. But I felt that they really made a strong effort to reach out, and that what they're trying to say is, hey, you know, we want to hear from everybody. How do they feel about this?
If they said that that the fish die-off was not related, then why did they bring it up if they're talking about the...
Because it was accused. It was it was definitely said to be related to it, and I don't actually really remember all the details, but I will say that the Division of Forestry and Wildlife had contacted us and said that they wanted to come in and talk, and, you know, they really did want to hear from everybody. I went to the meeting. There was more experts there than there were people who came. I worked hard to really roust people to come. I felt that they were, you know, really sincere. So
why did they want to do this poisoning a second time if it failed the first time? And in what way did it fail? If it wasn't the fish die off, what was the failure?
It didn't get all the rats.
It didn't get all the rats. That was the failure.
Oh, so they're coming back to finish it off.
They're coming back to do it differently. And so last time it was kind of like just dumped out of a helicopter. And this time they are walking and setting pellets they're like in a little container. They're pellets. So
yeah, I use those
in addition to
get rats. It's kind of gross because they kind of explode inside the rat.
And that's in addition to the drop, right? And wasn't it done at a different season also?
It was done in a different season, and so that they were trying to time it the right way with the rain, and so they were going to do a physical placement where they could, and then they were only going to do the helicopter drop where it is simply too dangerous. I know Keith Robinson was at the meeting, and he was speaking about how dangerous it can be to be walking up on some of those precipices, and that it can slide away. The people who are going to be doing the applications are, I'm not picking on my own gender, but I mean they are somebody more that you would expect to see at the juice bar and doing yoga than it's not like is that a terrible thing to say? He's looking at me because they're just kind, soft, gentle women. It's not like not that if a man was doing it, it doesn't make it different, but I mean it is. I just, like, one of them I've known for a long time, and she is just, like, such a kind person. It's not, it's interesting to see these two women being treated the way we're used to seeing people treat, like, the army or somebody bombing or something. I mean, it's just like, I'll be honest. I was like, really? This is
You're just okay.
So bad.
Skating around the edge, or
I'm
not
being
even,
sexist, right? Or
yeah,
I'm being sexist, and I'm doing a demographic thing. But I'm just like,
you're gender profiling. But look at Israel. All the women are oppressing Palestinians that go in the army. All the women go in the army there. Required.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that I was sort of taken aback because when I knew that there was going to be this poisoning, I was expecting it to, not be like, I was expecting a little bit more of an aggressive community that was.
I'm curious how they found those people. Like, did they seek out a certain type, or were they the only ones who applied?
No, that's, I don't know. I didn't ask that.
That's a good question.
But that's who works for Island Conservation. They seem like super kind people, and I know I have gotten an incredible amount of backlash for putting suggestions that maybe this isn't a good thing on, up on social media, and also that there has been, there's an effort right now. I'm trying to look at the actual document. I've been told by animal activists that are very professional and well-skilled in the public sector that there is a proposal to shoot and kill dogs and cats that are found on state land that aren't on a leash. So I was like, what does that say for our hunting dogs? What is that? I just put that up there, and just the amount of anger from the bird people that I should suggest in any way that this rat poison shouldn't be up there, or that we shouldn't kill the dogs. I mean, it's just really hard to.
Well, dropping putting poison in the environment, it always makes me wonder if it's a wise thing. And I know the island conservation people swear that it's really harmless, but doesn't this anticoagulant ultimately go into the groundwater and into the ocean? It goes into the soil. I mean, they just found Roundup in Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Glyphosate, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we're just riddled. I just hear about more poisons going into this little bit won't hurt here, this little bit won't hurt there. And it's just, we're just saturated. You know, in, what do you call it, organic sea salt? Did you read that about how, like, in all the organic sea salts they tested, they all had a huge amount of very, very fine particles of plastic.
Well, and I worry when I use my sea salt that's from this island. I always worry every time I'm putting it in my food if it's got more than just salt. Because
it's ubiquitous. And last time I was on Kauai because I live on the Big Island, and it was this last trip about a month ago was the first time, and my friends have seen this, like you guys have seen this already, but I had never seen on the beach at Kapa'a just completely tons of little plastic particles as if they were sand particles integrated into the sand. That was the first time I saw that.
It's in the, you know, the way the swell and the wind comes. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felician Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Kuhan, I have people holding.
Okay, yes. Thanks. Nice talking to you. And we'll try to look for some good news.
Okay. Thanks.
Take care.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm back, as I promised.
Oops. Uh-oh. Did we accidentally drop them?
Yeah, it's working a little bit different then, but I'm learning. So,
okay,
yeah,
so
I'm
caller.
So sorry, caller, please call back.
Please call back. And I do want to invite everybody, while we're waiting for that caller to call back, to KKCR's birthday party. It's coming up, and we really love to have the opportunity to interact with our friends and listeners, and it is our 20th birthday very soon. It should be a great party.
Come help KKCR celebrate 20 years of broadcasting on Kauai. On Saturday, August 19th at Lydgate Park Pavilion, we're having a big paena featuring live music by Michael Keale, Lady Ipo, Shiloh Pa, and Gunga Lagunga. There'll be plenty ono grinds, silent auction, a bouncy house, games, and fun for the whole ohana. The whole community is invited, and everyone's encouraged to bring a KKCR birthday cake to share. So save the date, Kauai. Saturday, August 19th at Lydgate Park. Ho'oli lahanao, KKCR. See you there.
So while I'm waiting for that caller to call back, we apologize for accidentally hanging up on you.
Yeah, please do call back. I'll feel terrible.
I want to just note that this Thursday, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative is having their annual meeting, and it is at the War Memorial Convention Hall. 5 o'clock, they usually have, like, light bulbs and rice and things that they give away, and it's a time to schmooze and meet. And then at 6 o'clock, they do a presentation. I am definitely going to go. It will be very interesting to see their side of the story. I have repeatedly, actually, invited them in, and I don't think it's that they don't want to come in, but they live on the other side, and there always seems to be something, so they don't make it here. I just did invite one of them to call in, because it was pointed out to me that something that I have on Facebook isn't completely accurate, so it's really important for me to be getting corrections if something isn't fully correct. I know one big issue, and that what has been posted on, is this week the Cultural Impact Survey has come. Office of Hawaiian Affairs has asked KIUC, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, to do a cultural impact study. There is a 65-year lease that is being asked to go to Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. There are two hydro plants. They're about 100 years old that are fed by this. Also, the Kapaya plant has water that runs through it. That is one of the newest plants. It's a very good diesel fuel plant for power. And there is water that goes through and cools it. So the concern is that in 1993, there was a concrete diversion that was put after there had been significant flooding. And prior to that, you know, there was flow that always went down the North Fork of the Wailua River. And after that, on the low to medium flow days, very often it 100% gets diverted. And at least that is something that has been seen. And what happened earlier in this past year is there was somebody who went up there and cut the concrete and opened it. So about 20% of the river continued to flow. And that is consistent with what is Hawaii public law, both for the public trust and especially for the Hawaiian cultural preservation.
So 20% of the stream should be flowing at low or no rainfall times? That should be the lowest?
Well, I am not an expert on it. And so I am just repeating what I hear, and everybody kind of has jumps in with a different correction. But that cut that went into it, where the concrete was cut,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know who did that, but it did return a consistent flow. And what I've heard is about 20% down Wailua River. I am not an expert on it. We went up there last Thursday with the cultural consultant. They had met at Ha Cafe for a moment. The meeting got moved over to the county building. It was in there for a time. It is one of the more junior consultants. Wonderful woman, Nicole, younger person. She was there at that meeting in the county building, and then Hal Hammett, who owns the consulting company, he stayed. And when the people who left that meeting, it is what was the direct observation, is people from Grove Farm and KIUC stayed for a meeting with Hal Hammett, who owns the organization, while the younger person acting on this job went up and met with, I counted, I think 23, 24 people, definitely heavily identifying with the Hawaiian culture, many of whom clearly have Hawaiian bloodline, but looking at how there is an active need for the continued water flow down there. There's many areas when the river runs dry that, you know, the lo'ikalo that can be planted lower, it doesn't have the right flow. And then the Department of Hawaiian Homelands in Wailua has never been developed. And one of the reasons is there's not enough water. It happens, almost because I've been said not to say it, but I'm going to say it. It happens that the person representing Kauai for the Department of Hawaiian Homelands also works for Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. So we have people, that's kind of this thing with the revolving door. We have people who work in government or work in industry. They sit on the boards. And so, you know, the needs of, you know, the corporate interests or the water department or whatever, it's both, it makes sense that it's somewhat represented, but also it seems like there might be a conflict of interest.
So is KIUC then a for-profit entity?
No, it is a cooperative.
Okay, so what are the motivations there? You said that.
Well, it used to be Kauai Electric. Certainly the people, they get paid pretty well. Like, you can just go on their website and you can look at what the pay level is. And it's like industry standard is my understanding, but it's, you know, people who work there get paid a whole lot better than, say, the mayor, for example. Says good paying jobs. I mean, there's a whole lot that the energy cooperative is doing really well. I think their weakest point is that C, that cooperative. When we see that the Department of Hawaiian Homelands person actually works for KIUC, I mean, it's not an argument. It's not a false piece of information that I'm saying. That is the truth.
Well, what's the significance of that?
Well, the significance of that is that what was being said in that meeting on Thursday at the county building is that the Department of Hawaiian Homelands has no intention of developing the Wailua lands. Not by her, but that was something that was being postulated. When we see that there's a whole solar array that was put on Department of Hawaiian Homelands in Anahola, adjacent to the existing neighborhoods, that's prime land for building for more Hawaiian homes. And so, like, there's not much money that actually goes to AHA, the Anahola Hawaiian Homelands Association. There's a little bit of money, but that doesn't help the people who are still on the waiting list. They don't get, like, say, free electricity. They don't get free water when the water is pushed. In fact, I went to the Department of Hawaiian Homelands meeting, and it was really asserted heavily that people have to be able to pay for their electric and their water and all those other things. And there was a little bit of a grumble on that because people are releasing land, prime land, for it. So, you know, if the board members that I just heard from on my phone are listening, please call in at 826-7771 and correct the misinformation. What I would say is that, you know, this water goes through KIUC, then it goes into the Kapaia Reservoir, and then it eventually gets dumped out in Hanamaolu Stream. But so it's like holding potential in the Kapaia Reservoir for Lihue area and Hanamaolu area. So it takes it away from what could be utilized. That's the very best that I can understand from having attended so many meetings. So maybe that they will put some real clarity on this. I actually like our cooperative. I think we're lucky to have them. I think they do a very good job. I support their goals. I support the goals that are there. I have heard them say at a board meeting that if the Commission on Water Resource Management says that some of that water can go downstream, great. It's really not up to KIUC. It's up to the Commission on Water Resource Management on which direction the water flows. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air. Hello?
Hey, Felicia?
Yes?
Are you on the air?
I am.
Oh, am I on the air?
You are.
Okay, I wanted to clarify, did you just say that Hawaiian Homelands allowed KIUC to build that array on Hawaiian Homelands?
That's correct.
And you went to the meeting?
I mean, I've gone to so many meetings. I mean, that's that's a done deal. Like,
okay,
that was
so here's
done.
My question. Was there protest or opposition from the people at Hawaiian Homelands?
Well, I mean, some, yes. And, yeah, sure.
And here's my concern is I've been working with a woman on the Big Island by the name of Terry Napeahi, who is from Hawaiian Homelands in the Hilo area. Her family land in the 20s was taken by eminent domain to build the Hilo Airport. That was the first of seven industrial sites, plants. One is the landfill. One is a gas storage area tank that they don't have any kind of anything in plan in the case of an emergency or explosion. The other is wastewater sewage. There's seven total. And what's happening is everybody in Hawaiian Homelands now, because, you know, you do one facility, and then it sets a precedent, and you do another one, and it builds up. And now they're at a point where there's nobody in Keokaha whose family, immediate family, hasn't died of cancer. Terry's brother died of cancer. And just learning about how this all took place in Hawaiian Homelands, when that land is supposed to be for Hawaiians.
Right. Well, do you know the observatory area on Mauna Kea, that is Department of Hawaiian Homelands? Do you know that?
I didn't know
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and there was a switch from land low. This is like in the 50s or the 60s, early on. They switched the land, and that land, when the switch was made, they said, hey, if you want to support your, you know, Akua area, you know, that you're a really important area. So they made that switch, and because it is Department of Hawaiian Homelands, they do not have to work with the Department of Interior when they make these international deals up there.
Oh, my God.
We did. We had an expert on that who actually had written one of the contracts and did the work, I think it was for the Subaru telescope. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just, the more you scratch the surface, the more disturbing it is. Now, I want to say I am just a person who attends these meetings. I am not a person of authority. I'm doing my best to have a dialogue, a community dialogue.
Oh, yeah, and I just wanted to
I'm
throw that out
for other people.
You know mm-hmm. what's going on Hawaiian homelands. In other islands, I didn't know that about how they were using the designation Hawaiian homelands to push through industrial projects like the TMT. But what I am seeing is that here in Hilo, Hawaiian people are getting very, very sick because they're using their land for these public utilities mm-hmm. and toxic waste sites.
Yep.
And the electric company is there.
And the bases. Every night. And the bases and the airports.
Yeah.
Our new landfill is mostly, I think, on Grove farmland, but the state land, at least a portion of it, is Department of Hawaiian Homelands, and it's wetlands. Now
it's just terrible.
So it's
so
tough.
I'm gonna go. I just wanted to throw that out there because this was news to me about the Hawaiian homelands in Hilo, and then you were talking about the KUC, and I thought, oh my God, these poor people. So connecting all the islands. That's all.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Felicia, I just want to invite one more time the caller that I hung up on to call back. I'm so sorry.
So there's another caller, 826-7771, and let's see if this is her. And then I have a few little pieces about the Planning Commission today. Jazz with John is going to be up at the top of the hour. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to share this comment that I flew back from LAX airport, and the stewardess, it was a United flight, and the stewardess says, Kauai used to be nice, but now it's just grown so past the infrastructure that, you know, it's pretty well industry known that it's a mess on Kauai because the infrastructure hasn't caught up with the demand. And, you know, I had to, I let her speak her mind and said, you know, I'd lived here 30 years and still really love it, but I just thought I'd share that, you know, that point is getting brought up, and it's pretty common to hear it. I was in Huntington Beach, and people, oh, yeah, we used to love Kauai, but it's gotten too busy, and mm-hmm. so that's all I had to say.
Okay, thank you. Uh-huh. Aloha. In alignment with that, I was talking to somebody who has been gone for a year, who lived here, who just has been gone, just came back, and she said she couldn't believe it, how overwhelmed the place was. And I've had several different people who live in the islands, and it seems to be shocking for people. Bringing up a little bit about the Planning Commission meeting today, too, you know, I just want to say how hard these people work. They are volunteers. Today, one of the things that did come up was about these fuel tanks. And one of the things was putting in three new 100,000-gallon fuel tanks. They're 28 feet tall. They'll be between two helicopter companies. And, you know, I was really appreciating, you know, the responsibility for being on the Planning Commission. They ask good questions. I guess that Kauai uses 65,000 gallons a day of fuel at the airport. And right now, mostly they have to drive that over from, like, now Willy, every day they're driving most of that over there. There's two 30,000-gallon tanks, and sometimes there's just not enough fuel to fuel up all the planes. Hmm. So without having to get off the plane, sometimes the planes go over to Oahu just to tank up because they don't have enough gas here. But the increase in nonstop flights is that large. And I was in the car rental company yesterday. I'm having some work done on my car. I got a car rental. And the rate, like for visitors, $120 a day. That's before the before the taxes added on to
My goodness. My family just rented a vehicle for 2 weeks for six people.
How much was it like?
Too much. But you know what? I say too much at the same time. Hey, the whole vacation is extraordinarily expensive, and we need that money to go into the infrastructure. If people are going to come here and drive cars all over the roads, that only makes sense.
Right. And, you know, and do we want, like, you know, you've heard that, if you build it, they will come.
Right.
Like, if you double the size of the roads, you're going to have to widen it. It's going to feel more like an urban environment, and it'll probably just get filled up too.
I did see that we're going to be able to fly directly to Colorado, unless I read that differently. Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Okay, I think they've had that before. Is that a new flight? I know that there's flights directly to Phoenix. There's a new flight directly to Oregon, a new flight directly to Alaska.
Right, a new flight to... Have there been direct flights to Colorado from Lihue?
I haven't taken it.
No.
So I don't know. I know that there's a direct flight to New Zealand. That's a new one that came in on American.
Speaking of New Zealand, I wanted to mention when we were talking about the Wailua River is that they actually gave human rights to a river. It was in...
Is that like the rights of nature or human rights?
You know what? I have to look again, because then they were trying to do it to the Ganges River. And they were trying to confer the Ganges River with basic human rights. Yes, it was human rights too, because they're talking about it would be not just the rights, but the responsibilities and the liabilities of a person for a river.
Okay. Well, that's definitely an interesting point. Hey, last Wednesday we had Yosh from the Kilauea Community Ag Center on. That's the farm up there in Kilauea, and it went before the Planning Commission and got approved. And I heard him on Sunday also talking, looking for support, and it was really good support. Actually, the Planning Commission meeting today, everybody seemed to be leaving there happy. It was not a contentious day. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
I just wanted to add something about the roads, building more lanes to alleviate traffic congestion and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I read a long time ago, written by Lewis Mumford, one of the greatest social scientists of the 20th century in America.
Mm-hmm.
And these are his words exactly, or almost exactly. He said, adding more lanes or building more roads to alleviate traffic congestion, it's like a fat man adding more belt loops as a solution to an ever-widening waistline.
Yes.
I think that's a really good analogy. It states it really clearly, because it's true. But anyways, thank you for all that you guys do. Aloha.
You're welcome. Aloha. So we have time for one more caller, 826-7771. And Marshall, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, you know, I do have a few announcements, Felicia,
sure.
in the realm of disaster preparation and emergency services. We have a training coming up for sky extreme weather training.
Okay.
And this is being done by the National Weather Service. It is, you can learn from Greg Hall of the Lihue Weather Office how to read the skies and know when severe weather is coming. And this is free and open to the public, and no pre-registration is required.
When and where?
That is on Thursday, July 27th, that's this Thursday, 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Hanapepe Public Library meeting room.
Okay,
and
thank you. Good job.
We've got two calls,
but unless they're 30 seconds each or something, because I've got the county council report before Jazz with John. So let's take that one call. So you've got just a minute, and then we're going to have Jazz with John. And for my caller number two, I'm not going to be able to take you. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, I'm the one who was
hung up on. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
All I need to say, and I trust I won't get too emotional about it, is that we all have a powerful, powerful tool. It's our thoughts, and speaking our thoughts filtered through our hearts to others is the most powerful thing we can do. And people say, I'm only one person. I have no voice. Who am I? But one person can change the world. One person has the power to start a movement and make something happen of great power and significance. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, and I'm going to agree with you. And definitely, you know, 1, 2, 10 people make huge difference in a small community. So thank you so much.
Okay. Sorry I got out of control. But
you
I
did not. You did not. Okay, thank you so much.
Right. Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. Okay, Marshall, one last thought, and then we're going to go to the county council report and Jazz with John's at the top of the hour.
There's a community emergency response training series coming up in Waimea. Contact kfdcert@kauai.com. There's also an FCC exam for ham radio license coming up. You can look at the KARC website, and there's a disaster preparedness for small business coming up as well. And you can look at HISBDC.org, and that's
Hawaii Small Business Development Corporation.
Exactly.
Okay.
Along with the Red Cross is putting that on. Sounds great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Marshall, as always, for helping this show to happen. Thank you, listeners and callers.
Thank you, Felicia. Aloha, everyone.
Aloha. And here's our county council report, and then we'll have Jazz with John on KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This has been Kauai Soapbox.